What I was actually going to say to you before I interrupted our friends at Karcher there is that we have 6 last-minute places on the Highland Radio Glasgow trip from the 1st to the 4th of May. It's a twin or double room, €575 per person sharing. So if that fits the bill for you, a wee holiday at the start of May, 6 last-minute places with twin or double room have become available on the Highland Radio Glasgow trip from the 1st to the 4th of May, €575 per person sharing. Okay. Let us see now. Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre in Letterkenny is on the way. I think we have other people in as well. There's a bottle of wine's turned up here with Paul's head on it, so I don't know what's going on there. May contain alcohol. We'll get someone in to have a sup of that and get the story behind that. I think he's brewing it himself. Do you brew wine? I don't know. You brew beer. I don't know what you do with wine. Ferment it? I haven't a clue. Paul will tell me, though. Read the HSE advising upcoming retirees that they will be a 3-month delay before pension payments commence is illegal. It's an ombudsman's issue, says that caller. Another, I don't work, and I think Good Friday should be a public holiday. And if anyone has to work it, then they should have the choice to attend the 3 p.m. mass if they wish to do so. Another, is the workers that work Good Friday entitled to the public holiday? Well, you see, it's not a public holiday, so there's no actual entitlement to it. Now, there's an old phrase to do with employment, like traditions and practice or something, I can't remember what it is, whereby people traditionally got Good Friday off. And if that's established as part of their working year, then that continues. New employees employers that have redrawn the boundaries, so to speak, then there's not an entitlement to it because it's not actually a public holiday. Now, hundreds of young people from all over Ireland are getting an opportunity to voice their opinions on issues that are important to them. It's part of the biannual national showcase event at Croke Park. Cirlin Óg, I believe it is, their youth councils that allow young people to have the opportunity to engage with decision makers and influence key policies at a local and national level. We're joined on the programme now by Ciara Gilmore, representative of the Donegal Youth Council in Clonmany. Good morning to you, Ciara.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. Right, okay, so why are you heading to Croke Park?
We're in Croke Park today to show off everything that we've completed over the last 2 years as a youth council.
And what are the big issues are you getting a sense of for young people down at the event?
Definitely mental health is a topic that most Corlas are working on. So,
yeah, so in other words, that's the feedback from right around the country?
Yeah, definitely.
And are you getting the sense that that's generally speaking or it's a worsening problem coming through and past COVID?
It's probably a worsening problem coming through.
Some of the other issues, social media and body image, that's been around for quite a bit, not getting any better, I don't think, judging by what you see on social media nowadays. What's the impact of that on young people?
Young people are using social media all the time, every day, and it's having a major impact on them. And as a Corla ourselves, we created a video to try and promote that not everything online is real and to focus on real life instead.
I think, you know, to some extent that argument's getting easier with the more sophisticated filters are becoming, in that, you know, that the elephant's sort of the cat's out of the bag, so to speak. You know what I mean? I think that that's almost helping this whole argument, that people presume that there's filters being used and filters are so fantastic. Do you get where I'm coming from in that regard?
Yeah, people are definitely starting to realise that, like, so-called social media influencers aren't perfect and that they are using a lot of station and filters on their social media posts.
Where does the climate and the environment sit in the consciousness of young people at the moment?
Young people are starting to realise that it's definitely a big issue, and especially in rural Ireland, like with our lack of public transport and all the rest. And as a Corla, we also tried to work on that.
And we also have this situation whereby environmentally minded young person in Donegal would not have the same options as an environmentally minded person in Dublin, for example. Do you know what I mean? If you decided, Kira, that living in Donegal was for you, but you didn't want to have a vehicle, for an example, you know, you couldn't probably make that decision here in Donegal, but someone, as I say, of a similar mindset as you in Dublin would have numerous options. So there's an equality there.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a real lack of public transport in Donegal.
All right. Bullying, obviously, is also an issue. I presume that's kind of also potentially tied into the whole social media body image space as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Talk to me about the campaign, Back to Mental Health. Talk to me about the campaign you were involved in.
As a Corla, we took part in the organisation of the Mind Your Melon Mental Health Festival online. And we basically sat on the team and helped come up with ideas and helped promote the campaign as well.
All right, brilliant stuff. So when did the Corla Nóg actually start? As you're down there now, is it ongoing today? Is it a 1 or 2 day event, or what's the story?
It started at 10 o'clock this morning, and we're here all day.
All right. And what about getting to the ears of those that make decisions? Are there government reps, HSE reps, those type of people there that you can speak to?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of ministers coming today anyways, and the Taoiseach as well, I think, is making an appearance.
All right, OK. That's good stuff. Kira, enjoy the day. Well done to you and
much.
The rest of the Donegal Youth Council. She's from Clonmany. It's a big event. It's once every 2 years. Would you know if Muff Village Road is still closed to traffic at night? Asks a listener. And, you know, we endeavour to get answers to your questions. Let me see if I can make sense of this. Right. The temporary closing of roads, Muff Village, nighttime closure runs from the 27th of March to the 31st of March. That is past. And from the 3rd to the 4th of March, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. daily. So the regional road through Muff Village from the Texaco filling station to the Circle K filling station will not now be closed on Saturday night, the 1st of April, and Sunday night, the 2nd of April, but it will be on the 3rd and 4th. I'm not sure you've helped there, Caroline, because I'm more confused than when we started. Let me review that and get back to you. Can we do that? Is that all right? There is definitely an issue with the bills from Electric Ireland at the moment. I got an overdue bill for €106 and I knew I didn't owe anything. When I called them up, I was right, I didn't owe anything and my next bill wasn't due until May. They just said they were having a billing issue. But are you on direct debit there? Because could they have potentially taken that money out of your account, or was it just a bill that was wrong? I'd be worried about that. I've had no electric bill since November. I've rang them 3 times, still no bill. Another, Greg, I got a reminder from Electric Ireland for a bill I didn't get yet. Okay, that's very confusing. Hi, Greg, I can identify with your texter, Re-Electric Ireland. I should have had a bill in mid-February and it hasn't arrived yet. Don't know what's the matter. That's coming in from Mary. So, listen, lots of you with the same problem. There's definitely an issue there. I'm particularly concerned, though, if they're billing incorrectly, especially if that direct debit could come out before you flagged it because you haven't had the bill. I'd be worried. Just keep an eye on that. Does anyone know why the treatment plant in Mahernennan is making so much noise again all night last night? Anyone out there with an insight? Another, I work in a shop and we used to close for Good Friday service, but in later years, the shop stayed open. The thing was, we didn't have a customer come into the shop. Yeah, but things have changed now, haven't they? Former President Carter is on his deathbed. If he dies, President Biden will not be coming to Ireland, my Washington contacts say. Okay, well, that is... could be an issue. I don't know if he's actually on his... I mean, listen, I think he's in end-of-life care, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily at end-of-life. We shall see. You've got contacts, I don't. Re-eviction painting. Strange how Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael only got annoyed until an opposition TD retweeted the image. Very poor effort of deflection regarding the ever-increasing housing crisis. Perhaps this Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government think that shouting all sorts at the opposition will sort out the homelessness and evictions. Well, it's a two-way street, the shouting back and forwards. I get you. I think that painting story has gone to bed. I think from going forward, you would hope all politicians, whether in government or not, will just think twice and think of the consequences. And sometimes words are needed just for context. But anyway, plenty of miles made out of it in political commentary and on the TV and radio, I suppose. We're in studio now with Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdurg Garden Centre in Letterkenny. How is your winter?
Ah, not so bad now. Everything went swimmingly.
Yeah.
We're not too bad.
Plenty of stuff coming through for spring in the...
Absolutely. It's just like just 2 weeks ago, it's like somebody switched on a light. Everything just burst into life and we're... flat out again.
A lot of people are getting the lawns mowed, the grass cut too soon.
To be honest, I haven't mowed mine yet. Now it's sort of it's grand if there's not frost due in the next few days.
Wednesday and Thursday night.
Yeah, so because you can all you can do is just turn.
What exactly the answer to the question? And I think what people try and do, they try and get the big hit, don't they? So it looks gorgeous, right?
Yes.
Cut it really tight. Frost comes in, bish, bash, bosh.
Pretty much, it's at a time when the grass is sort of weak, like it hasn't had the power of the sun over the winter months, basically. And by cutting it, you're sort of putting it into shock a wee bit, and then it leaves
it
more susceptible.
Can you move forward a wee bit just closer to that microphone?
It leaves it more susceptible to the frost.
But you're not scolding anyone that has.
Absolutely not, no.
If you're on the fence,
just
leave it a bit.
I would tend to leave it.
Next week, I think, you know. I think this will be the last week of frost.
Yeah, and there are plenty of time to be spent cutting grass too, so...
Yeah, forget Carlo weather and Donegal weather channel. This is Lahey weather is telling you.
Yes, that's it.
Next week, there's no frost. Okay. Right, okay. So what could we be doing or should we be doing now?
Pretty much now, March, April is a perfect time for... There's a lot going on in the garden. First thing I would do is generally just do a general tidy up first. So by doing a tidy up, you're sort of taking stock of what you have and then sort of seeing what direction you want to go in the future. But in terms of starting seeds, I think that pretty much now is perfect time for starting that.
Seeds for what?
Seeds, even fruit, vegetables, flowers, whatever.
Right, in the ground or pots?
Generally, at this time of year, depends on the varieties you're using. Peas, beans, onions, that sort of stuff can go straight into the ground.
How would we prepare the ground though? Because let's say it's been sitting there for the winter.
Yeah, pretty much. If it's a new area, give it a dig over. Put the grass down basically and then just cultivate it as best you can and give yourself sort of what they call a fine tilth to make a nice seed bed.
So get a rake even and back
pretty
and
much give it a rake
it.
Exactly. And if you're doing a bigger job you get a higher thing like a rotavator or something like that if you're doing like an area for potatoes or something.
All right, okay, so you get that sorted. What do you put in there? Onions?
Pretty much if you're only starting out, even starting out with kids there, stuff like peas, beans, onions are all perfect and fairly foolproof. So there is
all the stuff they won't eat.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anything your kids won't eat, you can plant now.
That's a big thing as well. Keep an eye on, or sort of try and tailor to what you will eat. There are a lot of easy stuff like radishes and stuff that you can grow very easily. But in my experience, nobody really wants them as much.
I jest about the children and all. But you know what? If you involve them in that whole process and the cooking and preparation, even for fussy eaters, there's quite a school of thought that helps them sort of appreciate and understand it and bypass the taste buds to some extent.
Absolutely. I know I've seen it in practice in my own house that the kids actually, if they're involved in the growing of the thing, they are much more engaged with it and they're much more likely to eat it.
Right, okay. So in terms of fertilising areas of your garden, so you're cleaning up, getting rid of dead leaves, whatever else might be there. And then where could you be putting fertiliser down now or what should you be doing?
Now's prime time for, if you have existing beds, get some sort of like an organic product that you can put onto the ground and just give it a general fertilise. Now it, as the growth's taken off, it'll really shove it on. So someone like your, just a handful per plant. But it's important to use the sort of more organic stuff than chemical fertilisers. You have a tendency to overdose, whereas the more organic ones are slow release and it sort of takes the risk out of it.
Poultry manure is one of your favourites.
Pretty much.
Still, it hasn't gone out of vogue in 2023.
Absolutely not, no.
Mulch, a lot of people have that around the place. What is mulch and how do you create it or where do you get it?
Mulch, you can generally use a lot of products from mulch and such as, the most popular one probably be bark mulch, which is just the bark of trees. If you spread it out over the ground, it helps to suppress the weeds because it cuts out the light and it actually, through the summer months, helps to retain moisture too. But a lot of people use their own sort of homemade compost that they've made from their food waste and that hands perfectly grand to mulch the ground with too.
All right, okay. Now, in terms of, you know, anything potted, certainly we're nowhere near window boxes or stuff like that, or maybe with certain varieties, but not a lot of people doing it. So what could people be doing who don't have a lawn or beds, you know, but they, you know, maybe have a little space out the back or a windowsill? Is there anything that you can be doing now this time of year that you couldn't up until now?
Yeah, there is plenty of sort of flowers you can be starting from seeds. Like some nasturtium, something like that there, they'll be ready for the summer period. You can buy ready-made stuff in garden centres, primroses, that sort of thing, just to brighten up the place now. Or what's very popular for pots at the moment is herbs. actually start your herbs now and then. You have them for your, especially in the one to sell, you have them for your cooking.
I mean, there's nothing better than if you are cooking to be able to pick something off your own pot and throw it into the pan. Like.
Absolutely. It's all about the freshness. Mm. So it is just from the one to sell to the pan.
And it's not cheap either. You know, listen, the accessibility to certain herbs now, and they come in little pots, but the pots really aren't designed, I don't think, for their continued growth.
Yeah.
The more of a delivery mechanism. But if you buy them on a regular basis, they're not inexpensive. Like,
no, absolutely. You know. It all mounts up. Yeah. And say, a perfect example would be rosemary there. We used to have a big one in the garden and it was like 2.5 feet high, but that would be plenty to keep you going for years and years and years.
Yeah, and it'll keep going. Won't yes, it replenish? Absolutely. Okay, okay. I think that's a really sort of accessible thing people can do. Right, okay. So with the garden and all that kind of stuff done, there was another question I wanted to ask that in relation to it. I keep looking at your bottle of wine here. We're going to get to that in a moment. We'll get some. I don't drink wine much. But we'll get some. So we've covered that. Tidying, a bit of fertilizer, some stuff can be planted. That's the majority of what we can be doing at the moment.
Pretty much. It's a good time as well. If your lawn needs attention, it's a good time.
What can we do to the lawn, for crying out loud?
Lawn, pretty much, if once again, it's been a wet enough winter, so moss is a big
problem. Well, it was the wettest March in history.
Yes. So moss is a huge problem at the moment, as it always is at this time of year. So the best thing to do, like with your tidying, go out, give it a good rake over, sort of remove any leaves and debris lying over the winter time, and basically see where you are at. And then maybe it's a bit early to be starting treating moss or even fertilising yet, but at least you'd know where you stand with it and sort of take it from there.
And what about, you know, trees that maybe have sprung up over a couple of years and are casting, you know, shadows that never sort of go away from your grass? I mean, that will help to sort of develop moss and all. Can you cut hedges and trees back at this time of year? I haven't a clue.
Legally, no. The period for that has passed. You have from the 1st of September to the 1st of March.
That's it?
Yep, pretty much.
All right, don't touch anything, folks. You legally can't do it. Mm-hmm. I have Japanese knotweed growing around my house, and I know I cannot touch it or cut it, but it's spreading rapidly, and I'm worried that it's going to start damaging my street and maybe even my home. Is there anything that can be done at all, even to slow down its spread? Now, when they say they can't cut it or touch it, is that...
Yes.
I know that you see the signs, right, where the councils say this is dangerous stuff, don't cut it and replant it close, but presumably you can take any action that you see fit to tackle it around your house, can't you?
The only problem with cutting it is it can actually grow from 0.7 of a gram of a leaf.
Right.
So by cutting it and removing it to some other place where you dump the stuff
Understood. Is
going to grow up
okay.
as well, you see. So the first thing to do in a case like that there, first of all, is don't panic. That a while out of the stuff about Japanese knotwood weed has been blown out of proportion. So it has, it's not as, like it is very treatable. It's probably, it's a long-term project to treat it and it can be expensive to treat it, but it is very treatable, generally by using chemical means, or there are actually a few more, coming onto the market now, there is a few more organic means of getting rid of it and using actually, it's basically the simplest way of describing it would be the equivalent of a welder.
But this idea that it's going to tear up your drive and destroy your foundations, you're saying that's maybe was a bit sensational?
That's very sensational. There are a few reasons that I could go into about why that sort of thing came about, but it became this big demon sort of thing.
Now the media got a hold of it for starters.
Pretty much, shy. And it became actually a big part of the reason was, this is my conspiracy theory now, but it became a thing in England back 2008, 2009. They refused to give you a mortgage if you had it in a property.
Mm.
But with the credit crisis, they didn't want to give you the mortgage anyway.
I guess so it became an excuse
not to.
I thought you were going to say that it was Japanese knotweed were actually little 5G transmitters, but you didn't go down that road.
You have great Wi-Fi at the bottom of the garden.
You didn't quite get on that road with your conspiracy
but no,
theory.
It is.
Listen, we're not going to brush over the moss, but right. Your advice is sound on the knotweed. Have a look around, see what's available.
And I think contact the county council. They've had good success in dealing with it along road.
Yeah, because there was a few trials and stuff, wasn't there? Let's do the moss in a little bit more detail, because I know there's a lot of people listening, and that's the bugbear.
Yeah.
So we'll ask this question and we'll get to it from that. Can you please ask Paul the age-old question, how can I eradicate or treat moss? As it is, it looks very unsightly. I've used treatment for grass fertilizer and moss, but to no avail. It come back. Now ahead of its first cut, what shall I do? And you know what that looks like when you cut it down? You've got a little bit of carpet, a little bit of grass.
It's absolutely. I know my own's no better, so it's not, to be honest. The best thing you could do probably at this time of year, first of all, give it a good rake over, remove any debris of that and sort of reveal what you have. Some people go down the sulfate of iron or the chemical treatment routes. What you would do is put it on probably pretty much from the next 2 weeks or so. You can put it on, leave it 2 weeks, the whole lawn generally goes black. And then you can hire a machine called a scarifier, which rips out all the moss. Basically, what you're doing is with the sulfate of iron that you're killing off the moss, and then it's breaking up the bond with the ground. And what the scarifier then pulls it out. You can actually, if you want to go chemical free, just use the scarifier on its own.
Yeah, that could leave patches though.
That will leave patches. It's very important to deal with them patches in terms
so
of.
So how do you deal with the patches then?
Basically, by using the machine or even using a rake, you have tore up the ground
enough. Okay,
exactly.
So just seed on top.
Just pretty much put seed on top. If you really want to, you can actually mix that seed with some soil.
Yeah.
Because if you scatter seed just on top of the ground and it comes very dry for 2 weeks odd, the seed will probably burn.
Now you're saying golf course and stuff. Maybe sometimes they have a mixture of sand, soil, and seed.
Yes, exactly.
Ideally, which is not hard to get your hands on, like to do a proper job. Like
no, absolutely not. No,
you mix that in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, mix it up in the wheelbarrow exactly, and scatter it on that way. Generally, at this time of year, the seed in its own is perfect because there's enough moisture going about.
I get you. Yeah, it's not going to blow off or stuff
exactly.
like that. All right, so there is hope. Now, is that something you have to do annually? If you're prone to moss, you're probably going to have to face up to looking at that job early April most years. Are you?
Pretty much. There's sort of two schools of thought on it. Some people are looking for the golf green sort of lawn going on, which is nice to have as well. Other people just choose to live with the moss to an extent, and obviously try and treat it and reduce it as best you can. But sort of, it's just the climate we live in.
Yeah, all right. We'll get to more questions in a moment. What's this here I have in my hand?
That appears to, everybody started growing their own food. I've taken it a step further.
Yes.
Growing my own drink.
Windbush wine.
Yes, I tried that out this spring now. So
I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm sure it tastes delicious. But it looks like you just kept that bottle beside the bed, Paul.
No. Not quite. So what I caught.
So it's made from Winbush.
Yes, Winbush flowers.
Yes.
So it is. Basically, it's just a mess.
Is Anya there? Because we're going to get Anya to have a taste when she's back. There's no panic. Relax. Go on.
She's ran away to hide now. So no, it's just basically
to cleanse her palate before she drinks this. Yeah.
No, basically, I've tried a few times, just using various fruits and stuff to make wine over the years, and just taking it one step further now by using the flowers.
Anya's going to join us here now. So in the fermenting process, I think my father did this once. There's big, massive glass.
Mm-hmm.
Jars. Is that not jars? Whatever you might call them.
Yeah, a demijohn, I think's the technical
right.
term.
Okay. Right, Anya, sit down here. Come here. Do you drink wine?
I do, yes.
Okay, well, occasionally, and obviously when it's appropriate. Right, well, let's see what you think of this stuff. Well, that glass is not the cleanest. I hope,
it's not my glass. I want to find out.
So do you want to do the honours here, Paul? Well, so this is his made... What is a Winbush?
Winbush flowers, yeah. So well, I was just in general, I was reading up stuff over the winter and I was just looking at what you can possibly make wine out of, and it just went for the most bizarre thing available.
You're drinking a wine made from something you can possibly make it from.
Fancy.
Right, okay.
Well, so there's plenty of raw materials out there anyway at the minute.
Anya, can just maybe, what's the nose of it like just before you...
No, I'm no connoisseur.
No, just sniff. What's it smell of?
It sounds kind of fruity.
Yes.
Are you glad?
No, it's not too bad.
No. Right, okay.
1 point.
Right, do you want a sip? Okay, she's drinking it. What's it like?
That's actually lovely.
Is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It kind of tastes like a juice nearly.
You have little faith.
Right, give me the bottle here.
It'd actually be very light. It hasn't actually fermented that long altogether.
I'm just going to have a little bit. And how much alcohol might be in this? I don't like promoting alcohol because it's dangerous. But
yes, I would say around 7%.
It doesn't really have much of a...
That's troublingly
easy to
flavor some.
Yeah.
But it does have a little thing off it as well. Look at the wee heading them too on the bottle there for anyone who's watching. That's really quite nice.
Uh-huh.
How many bottles of that did you make?
Oh, I only made about 10 or so.
Excellent.
So,
okay.
Most of them have disappeared.
Do you need a top up on you?
No, I think I'll just...
You sip on that?
On, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, we'll leave that there for now. Right, listen on you. Thank you.
Thank
what would you give it out of 10? Sorry.
I would give it a 9 out of 10.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah.
High praise.
Yeah.
It's very easy to drink, so, you know, you'd be able to drink it all night.
Well, again, we do not promote such activity here, but you understand where Anya's coming from. All right, Anya, listen, thanks
Thank
for being
you.
A good
Thank
sport. You. We really appreciate it. That's Anya Sweeney there. Yeah, it's actually, there is quite a nice taste to it, all right. It is a wine as well. So the what is a Winbush? What does it look like?
Gorse would be what fancy people would call it.
It's not the one with the yellow flowers on it, is it?
Exactly.
Is that it? That's made from it. Yeah. There must be a ton of sugar in it, though.
There's a fair wee bit of sugar in it, all right.
And anything else?
A wee bit of lemon, just gorse flowers tend
to... Oh, you can actually get the slight wee hint of lemon. It's only tiny wee...
Gorse flowers taste coconut, but very mildly. So to actually give it any flavour, you throw a wee bit of lemon juice on the other.
Right, there you go. Okay, well, well done. All right. We're going to be back with more questions from Paul and... God, that does, it does bite, doesn't it? There's a wee sting off it. Not in a bad sting, but you know what I mean? Like a little aftertaste lemon.
Mm.
And I only had a dribble. Okay, we'll be back with more from Paul, if we're all still standing up, after these.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at highlandradio.com.
Paul's Winbush wine just managed by the skin of its teeth to survive the ad break. He's still with us. We're going to get to some of your questions now. Hanging baskets, how soon should we have them ready?
How soon? Generally, we would never put nothing out before the 1st of May.
Yeah.
So wouldn't. Mid-May is perfect.
See, I always find that our first conversation of the year is about managing our ambitions and expectations.
Yes. And what I got, no, it's really, you have to just garden with the seasons. And like I say, they're going to be frosted at the end of this week. So any sort of hanging basket stuff you put out now is just going to not last the night.
So basically, that'll be our next convo, I think, the next time you're in. Yeah. When is the best time to put sulfate of iron on the lawn?
Sulfate of iron, you can pretty much from now on, you can do it generally any time between April and September. But I would leave it about 2 weeks till the temperature comes up a wee bit first.
Is last year's compost fertilizer in my planter okay for now to grow vegetables in this year, or do I need new stuff, please?
Generally, last year's stuff would be grand in the pot. I would freshen up the top of it a wee bit with some new stuff just to give it more nutrients. And if you're using old compost like that, depending on what you're growing, give it a good check first for the likes of slug and snail eggs. Because if they're over...
What do they look like?
Generally, they're like wee things about maybe 2 millimetres across, like wee eggs, and they're clear. So they're see-through. But if any of them there, because obviously once they smell your vegetables, they're going to hatch out. So just keep an eye for them, even around the rim of the pot and around the inside rim.
You don't want them smelling your vegetables. What type of carrot should I buy to set?
What type of carrot should you buy to set?
Because carrots aren't actually orange, really.
No.
Per se.
No, you get all sorts of colours.
We have been conditioned to buy orange carrots, and that's why they're orange. I wonder how many people have grown carrots and chucked them out thinking they were off or something.
Yeah, pretty much. A friend of mine does a lot of sort of organic growing in that, and he was specialising in like the yellows, whites and purple carrots. And actually, once again, for the kids, it's much better to actually get them involved because it's a bit weird, they'll eat it.
So a particular...
There are a few different varieties.
Mix them up, maybe.
Pretty much, because to be honest, I'm the wrong person to be asking, because I have grown everything in my life except carrots. Mm. Never work out for me, so they don't. They're a new sort of development of carrot seed. You can take a look for them. So you get them in some garden centres, whereas they're actually... A big problem with carrots is that you have to thin them, and then that brings pests about because they can smell them as you thin them.
So they're labour-intensive then, are they?
They can be a bit, but what a new invention for them now is like the seeds are actually spaced out in like almost like a tea bag and a big roll of tape. And you roll it in, so that's at the perfect setting.
Yeah.
So just it's worth keeping an eye out for them.
A caller says, don't be cutting grass until June. Let the dandelions and wildflowers grow. We and the bees need them. Without the bees pollinating our fruit and vegetables, the world would die. Yeah, and I know that's something you're interested in as well, Paul. And more people are maybe reducing the size of the lawn or actually just having it sown wild as well. So,
yes.
You know, but at the end of the day, if people want to cut the lawn, are we at the stage where we discourage them to just get a slight bit of joy out of looking out of their window at a cut lawn? I'm not advocating for that. I get where the listener's coming from, but some people are already sort of splitting it off a little bit, aren't they?
I suppose it's all a matter of choice, if you know what I mean. Dandelions are an important source of early pollen and nectar for bees and stuff, you know, but it's, like I say, it's a matter of choice, pretty
much. I mean, listen, look at the fields, the hedgerows and our bogs, right, and see what's happening to them. On the scale that it is, and that's why I'd be kind of reluctant to make someone feel guilty for having a lawn. But I get where the listener's coming from, and you can strike a balance. Recommendations for a fast-growing evergreen hedging, something that's cost-effective and that will provide privacy.
Yes, probably our most popular one by far would be Gristlinia, which is like a, it's got a limey green leaf generally. Mm. It will grow up to maybe 8-10 feet if you let it. It's very manageable to keep it down at a lower level too.
But and what's the name of that hedge that kind of became the North Korea of hedges?
Yes, the Lalandis.
That's gone out of...
Very much out of fashion. We've got.
Tell you, when it's looked after, though, it's beautiful, but...
Yes, it's just sort of a big green wall, but it's just... The problem is if it gets out of hand at all,
yeah,
it can be very unmanageable. Mm. So we can, but it really has gone out of fashion in the last 10, 15
but
years.
But is it cheap and fast-growing?
It would... To be honest, it's not actually that much cheaper. It is fast-growing, yeah, all right. So it is, but once again, faster-growing... You have more maintenance costs further down the road. You have
to cut it
twice as much.
As I say, it's fantastic, but if it goes out of hand, it goes out of hand. So what other hedgerows then would you suggest?
Gristlinia or laurel probably would be quite good.
Okay, Paul, my hydrangeas haven't bloomed in 2 years. Lots of foliage, but very little blooms. We haven't fed them anything and pruned them back 2 years ago, but still no blooms. We don't have a problem with frost. Jack wants your solution.
Probably the first solution would be to say that they haven't fed them recently, so probably a wee feed would do no harm. You can actually get ericaceous feeds geared towards hydrangeas of that, which would be good, or just general touch with a product called potash. If he says there's plenty of foliage, nitrogen's not the problem. Because so if you get a balanced fertilizer or someone that's fairly high in potash, it actually gears the nutrients towards the flowers as opposed to the foliage.
Yeah.
So hopefully that should kick in.
Because there is a science to all of it. Some of the stuff's simple. Yeah. Some of it just requires a little bit of...
Pretty much. I would give it a wee light pruning now as well. Mm-hmm. Just not too hectic.
What is light pruning?
Light pruning would be sort of reduced by probably less than a third.
Right. From the tips, obviously. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of people with hydrangeas this time of year can cut them back quite hard.
Mm.
But now if you're looking specifically for blooms, I'll give them a wee light pruning now.
Is anything I can plant in my garden that would soak up a lot of moisture? My garden tends to flood quite often with rainfall. I'm just wondering if there are any bushes, hedges or plants that are good for taking in a lot of moisture. I don't think planting's going to solve that problem. Maybe
quite
it is.
Possibly not. It can help to reduce it in a good way. Probably the most common thing for that would be willow in a big way.
Willow. Willow.
Yeah, or folks around here, they would call them sallies to an extent. Mm. But by planting willow, you get quite ornamental ones, but they can drink a huge amount of water.
You mean to tell me I was beaten with a... willow stick and not a sally rod.
Exactly, yeah. It depends how fancy you are, I suppose.
Would Paul consider giving advice on using natural household products ingredients to combat garden problems to help save biodiversity? Well, listen, I remember doing items like this years ago, and it wasn't necessarily with you either, where everything was a chemical response. Now more and more we're talking about, and you've already been, you're a strong advocate for natural fertilizers and what have you. And I find in our conversations, Paul, the last place you go is something that's harmful or damaging. Right. And I think that's a trend in gardening now, isn't it? We're always looking. But there comes a point where there is something that if you need to get rid of it, you're going to have to get on a chemical route.
Now, very much, even in the garden centre, we would always try and give like a natural remedy or sort of even some of the companion planting to give a natural thing. But there are occasions where chemicals are, such as your area color, but the knotweed.
Yeah, but like, we use that now as the last.
Yes,
last
exactly.
Option,
yeah. But
we?
No, even from when I started in the industry to now, the amount of alternatives out there and the emphasis on chemicals has lessened
hugely.
You and
your bloody washing up liquid and stuff like that.
That's it, exactly. My garlic spray.
Your garlic spray, yeah, exactly. But listen, we'll get to much more of those types of advice as things start to really brighten up and liven up for us. I'm trying to grow my garden, says the listener, and it's in its very early stages. So what's good to set now? I think maybe something that gives them a bit of impact, you know what I mean? And makes them feel like they're making a bit of rapid progress.
Pretty much. I'd say suppose the first thing to do is just actually sit for a couple of hours and look at your garden and see where you see it. Because where some people would see garden as vegetables, not other people see flowers.
Mm.
But I always reckon a good thing to start with the garden is sort of hedges to give you a sort of a framework around it and actually to provide shelter.
Frame it off.
Pretty much. And hedges really, by cutting the wind, it really increases what you can grow.
Mm.
But the other thing would be go to your local garden centre, take a walk around and see what catches your eye.
I think people don't realise how amenable you guys are to someone coming in and having a chat and painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll walk around the various samples that might be there and say, this could work in this area and that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's part of your... loving your work too, isn't it? Engaging with the public.
And, absolutely. Even technology's moved on.
I'm not saying you're going to design their garden for them, don't get me wrong, but there's going to be, you know, some good solid advice in that bit of time they have with you.
But no, so the way technology's come on, like, pretty 99% of people come into the garden centre now is a picture in the phone of their garden, or you can actually even look at it in Google Earth and get an idea of the size and scale and where it's facing.
Yeah.
So, like, people are more and more to help advise people. And, like you say, if you are going and looking for advice, bring a few pictures with you. And that gives the person you're chatting to a much better idea of what's going on.
Rather than trying to use their mind's eye. All right, listen, come here. We went easy on you for our first gardening item of the year, Paul. But as I say, now in the next, you know, 6 weeks, maybe. Is it? No, next month, really things are starting to crack on, aren't they?
Absolutely. No, everything sort of kicks off from here, really. St. Patrick's Day is always traditionally the start of the gardening.
I think that kind of also coincides with when you start seeing the daffodils, though, isn't it, as well? Right. And it kind of all ties in, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The daffodils, and next thing you see now is that you start noticing around the country is the cherry blossoms are becoming out. And then people sort of associate that with almost like spring, start of summer.
Excellent. All right, listen, Paul, it's always a pleasure.
You can chat
to Paul and his colleagues at Ballagher Garden Centre in Letterkenny, and wherever you are around the county and region, you're bound to have a garden centre close to you as well. Hop in, chat to them. They're humans, and they are and you might even have a bottle of wine.
You never know.
Well, I think all yours is gone now, isn't it? So don't go to the garden centre in Ballagher looking for wine, because Paul's it's got shot of it all in one way or other. All right, listen, Paul, as always, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
That was the Garda slot of Garda slot. I am having a nightmare of a day. Our gardening slot. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show as we head towards noon after these. Martha Sweeney is manager of Drinkaware Education and is with us now. Martha, Martine Way, a very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
And good morning to you too.
It's great to have you with us, because we're speaking in the context of Drinkaware launching a new campaign to reduce harm-related alcohol consumption, as new research shows the age people are having their first drink at in Ireland is getting lower. 14.8 years, I believe. You don't ever kind of want to see trends in this day and age with all the information that's out there going in that direction, do you?
You know,
it's like seeing an increase in smoking. You just don't want to be seeing that nowadays. We should know better.
That's true. But the good news is that more young people also are abstaining from alcohol. But the concern is the number of young people in Ireland in terms of, compared to other European countries, that the incidence of drunkenness is higher. So the concern is that when young people drink, that they're drinking more. And the long-term consequences of that is very significant. Now, the difference between, for instance, the research that was carried out for us by Behaviour and Attitudes found that those who were 50 years of age, on average, they had their first drink at 17 years, whereas those in their 30s had their first drink at 14.8, which is very young. And our campaign is very much a parent's campaign. Now, every parent wants their child to be happy and healthy. And in that regard, in relation to alcohol, parents can be enablers of their child being happy and healthy, and are they can be enablers of alcohol consumption.
All right, and we'll get to that and tease that out a little bit, because what's kind of interesting in, for those aged 50 plus, the average first drink was 17 years. Now we have the knowledge of how the young person's brain and body is still developing, and the negative impact even small levels of regular alcohol intake can have on brain development, for example.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not all done and dusted at 15. They're still developing.
And sometimes the perception is that, you know, it's okay for them to be having the odd drink, that, you know, even under 18 years of age. The reality is that alcohol should have no place in childhood. The brain is still developing, their bodies, their bones, every organ, everything is developing in the young person, and especially during adolescence, which can be a time of sunshine or shadow for young people. And they often turn to their peers. They have this need to move away from parents and to have a sense of belonging. And sometimes parents feel that their peers have more influence on them than they have. But the reality is that young people themselves, in research we carried out in 2016, and this is borne out by other research, the young people themselves have identified parents. They said parents, 95% of young people of third years in 2016 said young people are the most influenced, or the parents are the most influenced. Parents and family members have the most influence in terms of deterring their young person from taking the first drink. And in research that was carried out by the University of Maynooth, it found that 57% of third years who were taking a drink had their first drink in their own home or somebody else's home.
And I want to talk to you a little bit more about that, but let's not forget, and listen, not being killjoys here, lots of people drink in moderation and so on and so forth, but we have to remember that alcohol is a carcinogenic. And we also have to understand too that in other countries such as Canada and a growing number of countries now, there is no amount of alcohol that is seen as safe. We still here have this 4 or 5 pints, which is a green light to drink up to that. Whether people like it or not, that's how it's perceived, right? The Canadians have gone down a different route. But I think once you say that any alcohol's okay, even though they don't quite say that, it is a green light to drink to that amount. Even though,
it's not no risk. The HSE guidelines are low risk guidelines. They're not no risk.
Yes,
guidelines.
But I'm on about perception, and that's why I believe
absolutely.
The Canadians have gone
and
down the route that they have.
3 pints. If you drink 3 pints in one sitting, 3 pints are 6 standard drinks. 6 standard drinks or more in one sitting is actually binge drinking,
and that's once a week, is it not? As well, that's not daily. I believe that's once.
And over a period of a week, the allowance for the low risk guidelines are that a woman shouldn't have more than 11 standard drinks in a week and a man 17, because their bodies are different.
Which is 8 pints, 8 or 9 pints.
But these are guidelines. They're not targets to be met. Mm. And it also says that there should be 2 free days. And these are for adults. There are no low risk guidelines for young people under 18 years
of age. Let's get back to them then too, because if you don't mind, sorry, Martha, I think sometimes we look at this as black and white, right? So you get a group where if they don't drink at all, the parents won't let them. And then you get another group that drink because the parents don't care. I don't really think that's where a lot of these people come from. I think there's a big grey space in the middle, right, where you'll hear parents say, firstly, I think they're more likely to be friends with their children than they might have been in the past. But B, that I prefer them to have a couple of drinks in the house where I can keep an eye on them and they build a respect for alcohol than going out and tearing it up and I don't know what they're doing. I think that accounts for quite a lot of this underage drinking.
Assumptions distort perceptions of reality. And making assumptions, for instance, parents, and you're right, parents can assume that it's good to give them the drink at home and to teach them how to drink at home. We're not like countries in the Mediterranean where young people grow up with drink, the climate, everything is very, very different. But even there are problems with young people drinking. But in terms of that perception, research has shown that those who start drinking at home in those circumstances are also liable to drink outside in the park. It just and it creates this pre-drinking culture, if you like, that they're going to drink before they go out and then drinking when they go out. But coming back to parents, it's not easy being a parent, and it's certainly not easy being a parent of teenagers, and there's no perfect parent, and there's certainly no perfect child. And we want to support parents to have the conversation with young people about alcohol. And it needs to begin young as 5 years of age. Little children develop expectancies around alcohol from what they see happening in the home and outside of the home. There are various influences on young people in terms of alcohol. And we want to support parents to have a conversation with their young person and it to be an informed conversation. Now, when I have workshops with parents, they're very enjoyable. They're non-judgmental. We're not asking parents to look at, you know, to tell us their own stories, et cetera, about alcohol, but we're asking them to look at their attitudes and beliefs about alcohol, their attitudes and beliefs about young people, and to recognize that they're the strongest influence in their young person's life around delaying the age of first drinking around alcohol.
And I think it's, I think too, it's more difficult for young people now on a couple of levels. Well, actually, 3 at least that I can think of. Firstly, how many people listening to this program, when their parents went for a drink, sat out in the car and were given a bag of potato and a Coke or something. I think lots of people listened. There was that separation, right? That was what mom and dad do in there, what you do out here. Secondly, the amount of drinking that happened in the home. We've gone through this transition. All the pubs that are closing now, people think the licenses are expiring. They're not. They're all being bought up by off sales. That's where the licenses are going. Right. So we're having more and more drinking in the home. So children are exposed to that. It's normalized. A lot of people don't smoke in the house, but they'll have a glass of wine. Why don't you smoke? Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So, and also too, we have to support our young people because it's our fault. We are bringing them into a society that has a drink culture, that winning, losing, happiness, sadness, everything is medicated or treated or enjoyed with alcohol. That's the way it is. Our perception around the world, we've seen recently, we are associated with boozing. Young people are being pressured into drinking. So rather than blame them or criticise them, which you're not, and it's not all children, the majority of young people this age don't drink. We have to support them and understand the world that we're bringing them into and what we're exposing them to as well. Are we giving them the best chance?
And I suppose in terms of that and you know, the culture, we can change the culture. We, you know, the way we celebrate St. Patrick's Day should be about art, music, all of these things, not about alcohol. We can change that culture, and culture has changed. The culture in Ireland around wine. I mean, when I was growing up, people wouldn't be coming to your house bringing you a gift of a bottle of wine. But that has all changed, you know, since then. And it's the impact of other cultures as well. But in terms of young people, we need to protect our young people. And parents have a key role in the protection of young people. We have partnered with My Kids Time, and we're delighted to have done so. And they carried out research for us. And we asked them who had the most influence on young people's decisions around alcohol. And number one, they listed their friends. Number two, peer pressure. And number three, parents. So if we don't believe as parents that we have an influence, we're not going to have an influence. So self-efficacy is about believing in my power as a parent. And that's what the webinars we are going to hold for parents nationwide, and also the workshops, will empower parents to have the conversation and to realise the young people need boundaries, they need to be monitored, they need good role modelling at home. And it gives parents the opportunity, it'll give them the opportunity to discuss and to relate with other parents. Key to all this is good communication with their child. And coming back to what you said, if a young person sees their parents using alcohol to cope with stress and difficulties and disappointment, they, you know, it's very easy to model that behaviour. Equally, it's as easy if they see their parents doing really positive things to cope with disappointment, stress, going to talking to somebody. So at a young age, if a 15-year-old starts drinking and or younger and continues to drink, they're four times more likely to have an alcohol-related problem later in life.
Yeah, okay.
So we need to protect that. And also, we need to give them the skills to develop resilience, to be able to cope without alcohol, to know that it's okay to fail, that it's okay to be disappointed or to be hurt or let down.
And just finally, do you think, given the fact that yours is a charity which is designed to, you know, highlight the dangers of alcohol, destruction, gorge and what have you, and we've talked about there's no risk advice in relation to alcohol, that Drink Aware kind of potentially could send out the wrong message. Is it time for a name change?
That's something.
It's a bit random. I'm just curious if you had a personal opinion. It's not like got you.
I'm not trying to catch you out. That sometimes people thought it was about drinking water.
No, it sounds to me like is you're going to drink, right? But be aware of this. I just think in this day and age that the messaging is just not necessarily on point with the direction of traffic. That, as I say, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Martha, and I hope you don't believe I am.
No, that's fine. But it is making people aware of alcohol. And that's one of the things that I would have found in working with parents, working with adults, they will say when they come to the workshops, it's very interactive. They're engaged in activities rather than it being talk and talk. And one of the things they'll say is they've actually reconsidered. They've begun to look at their own attitudes, their own behaviour, their own.
Yeah, you have to look in the mirror, don't you?
So
okay.
in terms of that, it is awareness.
Understood. And as I say, it's just a marketing and something is that area is just something I've been interested in. Martha Sweeney, people can get onto DrinkAware, the website, to have a look at the new resources that are available for parents, including the Talking Matters and presumably notification of upcoming seminars, webinars as well, Martha.
And the seminars and webinars, if they contact me, Martha at the webinars and the workshops, martha@drinkaware.ie.
Will you have a lovely day, and thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Okay. That was Martha Sweeney there of DrinkAware. And that is where we have to leave it on today's show. Thank you so much for listening and taking part. Back with you tomorrow morning at 9.